Blog Talk Radio.
People try to find that one. And they always come up with none. I'm not trying to end up like them, no. Cause being lonely just ain't for me.
Ain't for me.
So I'm steady
searching,
cause I know she's out there
lurking.
And she's gonna put it down till I'm done. She's gonna be the best I ever had.
I'm looking for the one.
Where are you?
I'm looking for the one.
Satisfy her every need. Love her so good, she will never wanna leave. Now I'm gonna make the same mistake. Cause
no.
I got an ice box where my heart used to be. So I'm steady
searching.
Cause I know she's out there
lurking.
I'ma put it down till she's done. I'ma be the best she's ever had. She's
I'm looking for the one.
Before I get into
the interview, and then after I do my announcements and whatnot, I just want you to give us a little bit of what you've been doing since you have last been on the show, if that's okay.
Of course. So, first of all, I'm super excited. Thanks for having me back on.
All right.
So, I've been up to my usual shenanigans, speaking, writing, blogging about size acceptance, fat activism, and health at every size. We finished the third annual Fat Activism Conference a couple months ago, and I've been training for an Ironman.
I mean, I can't wait to hear about that. So, yeah, it's gonna be a great show. I'm just gonna go through my announcements real quick, and then we can just jump right in back into the interview. Okay.
Of course.
All right. So if you guys, I love you guys turning in and sending me emails and asking questions. It's awesome to get those kind of responses. So if you'd like to follow me on Facebook, you can follow me on Facebook at george.mango.904R, or you can just type in Sign Off Forums and you can go straight to my page. I also have a Twitter. You can get me at Twitter at Sound Off Forums. Excuse me, SoundOff 97413. That's hashtag SoundOff 97413. And I started an Instagram a couple of days ago. Has no idea how to work it, but they say that's the hottest thing smoking, I guess. IG for Instagram, I think, whatever. But you find me at hashtag GBev3, or you can just type in SoundOff Forums and follow me there. If you'd like to call in and just be part of the show, or you just want to call in just to listen, love to have you call in and listen, or whatever you need to do. If you'd like to be in the chat room, I think you have to sign in order to be a part of the chat room. I'm not sure. Right now I have a couple of people in the chat room, which is awesome. So if you'd like to call in, the call-in number is area code 516-666-9874. That's area code 516-666-9874. And as we always do, we kick it with Ephesians 6, 12 through 13. And it says, not with eye service as man pleasers, but the servant of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatsoever so do, good things to any man doeth, the same shall he receive from the Lord, whether it is bond or free. And yet ye masters do the same thing unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your Father, your Master, is in heaven. Neither is it in respect of the persons with them. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but principalities, against powers, against rulers in darkness in this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Wherefore, take upon the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand the evil day, and having all done to stand. So, now that we're here, and I got all that out of the way. Okay, so now we can get back to the interview. So can you elaborate on the Ironman marathon?
Yeah, so a few years ago I did a marathon as part of a project to kind of do some athletic things that were outside of my comfort zone. I've always done sports and dance, but I've only ever done things that I was good at immediately. If I wasn't good at it immediately, I just never did it again. And so I thought, well, maybe there are some lessons, you know, that I could learn by doing things that I'm not good at. And so I did a marathon. I was terrible at it. So I was like, well, what could I suck at more than this? And the Ironman triathlon came up as an option. And so actually, I was supposed to be done with it. The plan was for me to train for a year for a half and then a second year, do the full, and then be done. And that would have been in November. But unfortunately, I just wasn't able to get fast enough. So I've got one more year of training ahead of me. And then November 2017 is now my date to finish and get the medal and really never do this again.
And never do it again, is it? Is it because you're just not filling in, or is it just, it was just something that you wanted to just check off your bucket list?
Yeah, well, I'm a one and done. I mean, it's definitely a bucket list item, but part of the reason why I did it was because I don't enjoy these things. And so, you know, it's with an Ironman, it's a long distance. You spend a lot of time running, biking, and swimming. And so I'm pretty ready to be done with it.
Okay, awesome. I just want to also put this out there. You can go to our website. Our website is www.dancewithfat.org. That's www.dancewithfat.org. And you can find out additional information about Ms. Reagan on her webpage. One thing that I found was very interesting about your webpage that I love is that you said, "Dance with Fat, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are not size dependent." Can you kind of elaborate on how you came about that statement?
Exactly. So I'll start by saying it dances with an S. So danceswithfat.org is the website. And as I looked at sort of the way that fat people are treated in our society, there are these hoops that we're supposed to have to jump through, right? Like there's this thing within fat community called the good fatty, bad fatty dichotomy. And it's where people will say something like, you know, well, I'm okay with fat people who quote unquote take care of themselves, which means doing whatever that person thinks we should be doing. But those other fat people, like, I'm not okay with that. And so I wanted to make it really clear that fat people deserve basic human respect because we're human. And that we have the right to pursue life, liberty, and happiness exactly how we want to do it in the bodies we have now with no hoops to jump through.
And that makes perfect sense because I have somebody post on my page, not necessarily disputing the fact that you can be happy in your body, but the person was apparently fat. And they said that they didn't want to live in a fat body because they didn't want to disrespect their body, that they only had one body to live in, and they would rather be healthy than live in a fat body and be shamed because they're fat. So I just replied, you know, well, happy for you, but other people are happy on how they live and how they view themselves. But wouldn't you agree, like, being a larger person, it's hard to get the weight off, you know?
Well, so, yeah, so that person's got a lot of different concepts all kind of muddled together. So the idea that the only way to respect a fat body is to try to make it thin, I think is really problematic. You can respect and love your body at any size and regardless of kind of where you are in your journey with how you feel about your body. Fat and healthy are not opposites. There are healthy and unhealthy people of every size, and there are ways to pursue health that don't have anything to do with dieting, which is a good thing because, in fact, all of the research that exists shows that only a very, very small percentage of people are able to maintain long-term weight loss. So for most people, they lose weight in the short term, then they gain it back in the long term. The majority of people actually gain back more than what they lost. And the biggest kicker, I think the thing that has been most surprising to me along sort of my journey of looking into the research around weight and health is that there's never been a study that looks at people who have dieted and maintained weight loss versus fat people to see if they're actually healthier. And part of the reason for that is there aren't enough people who have maintained weight loss to really get a study together. But it's all based on the hypothesis that if we look like thin people, then we will become healthier, despite the fact that there are thin people who are unhealthy. So it's kind of, this whole thing is kind of a big sort of hypothesis and misconception and incredibly profitable myth that's sold by the diet industry. But the last thing, you know, the person said that they didn't want to be stigmatized and so they lost weight, which, like, you're allowed to try to do that, but what you're doing in essence at that point is saying that the cure for social stigma is for the people being stigmatized to change themselves. And I don't agree with that at all, right? I don't think the cure to bullying is to give the bullies my lunch money and hope they stop beating me up. I think the cure to social stigma is ending social stigma and pointing out that the problem isn't my body. The problem is that people say negative things about my body, and that makes them the problem, not me.
So isn't it also like, what is the word? They call it fat shaming. Am I saying that correctly? where you see, I mean, you know, a lot of people on my page are big women and big men, and I'm in these groups, and they, other people that are outside of the comfort zone of the BBW community would take a picture and then use their picture to make it out of a joke or make it out of some type of gesture so everybody can laugh at. But we also see that in movies, like they use fat people or big people as the of the brunt of the joke. What are you? How do you feel about that? Can you explain your views on that?
Yeah, I think that's really, really not okay. I mean, like, it's like the most basic level of elementary school, don't do this behavior, right? Making fun of people for how they look is adolescent and it's wrong. And so, I mean, I've had my picture photoshopped, my head photoshopped on a whale, and, like, you know, people in various sort of internet hate troll communities will do pictures of fat people, you know, as a joke. And yeah, it's, you know, again, it's really adolescent. It's obviously wrong. And the problem isn't me. The problem isn't that fat people exist. The problem is that there are people who spend their time making fun of fat people. The problem is that movies see it as okay to make fat people into the constant butt of a joke or the constant self-loathing sidekick. And so we don't get positive representation of ourselves. And then, not surprisingly, fat people don't feel good about our bodies because the only thing that's ever been modeled for us is this negative idea of being fat. So that's why I think it's really important that fat people are, like, out there and living our lives and doing that out loud and giving other fat people, you know, those role models and those shining lights to say, no, you can live an amazing life in the body that you have now. You do not have to spend all of your time and energy and money, you know, trying to manipulate your body size.
I totally agree. I know, you know, I hate to bring this up, but during the presidential debate, President-elect Trump said that he doesn't know who could hack in America's systems, or I don't know, I should get the exact quote, but he said it could be a 400-pound person sitting behind a computer. And I know I immediately reacted to that because of, you know, the people that I know. And I think that was very disrespectful for him to say something like that. And nobody's ever held him accountable for saying that.
Yeah, I mean, I saw people react to it online. I think part of it is that Donald ran on a platform of blatant racism, xenophobia, Islamophobia, anti-queer, anti-trans, anti-intellectualism. And so the idea that he was also anti-fat sort of didn't surprise anybody. Because he was already just immersed in bigotry in his entire campaign. But yeah, I mean, that is the idea that the weight of the hacker would have anything to do with it, right? Just like it was the first thing he could think of that would be negative about that person is that they're fat. As if that has anything to do with whether or not somebody's hacking is ridiculous. And it's just, it's simple bigotry, and it, you know, sort of defines him and his campaign.
Right, because we can't judge somebody's intelligence or their intellect based on their size. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the definition of bigotry, right, is making judgments about people based on unrelated characteristics, which is exactly what that is. The idea that you can look at a fat person and know whether they're a hacker or a good person or what they eat or how much activity they do or anything about them other than the fact that they're fat. You know, Marilyn Wan famously said that the only two things you can tell from somebody's body size is what their body size is and then what your personal prejudices are about people that size.
Right. So I want you, could you talk to us more about your health coaching, your experiences when you do your speeches to universities?
Sure. So when I go to talk at a university, I usually do, the way that I do my fees is a little bit different. A lot of speakers do a fee for one talk, and I do a flat fee and ask them to book me for as many things as they want. Because I figure, like, you know, I went there to talk, and I can watch Storage Wars in a hotel room anytime. So I often get to do a lot of different talks when I go to university. So I'll do like a main talk, something like, you know, a common one I do is the positive body, health, happiness, and high self-esteem, starting where you are now. And so that'll be a fun talk, usually in the evening, to a general audience. But I also get a lot of chances to like speak to the healthcare practitioners of a university about how to provide compassionate, evidence-based healthcare to people of all sizes without creating a sizist environment that causes people to either not want to engage with the healthcare practitioner or to not be able to get evidence-based care because the practitioner is too focused on their size, that kind of thing. Sometimes I get to talk to the athletic staff about how to create a size-accepting environment within like the university's fitness center or their fitness classes. Sometimes I get to teach dance classes, which is always really fun. It's interesting and it's fun, and I really love doing it. And I've been lucky to get a lot of chances to you know, go to different universities and meet so many people and talk about this stuff.
Yeah, I was able to go to one of your classes at the University of Oregon, and me and my wife went, and I totally enjoyed it. It was, you know, it was kind of like, wow, this, because here in Oregon where we live, it is one of those, everything's healthy, you have to eat this way. If you're not ordering a salad, if you're ordering more than one plate of food, they look at you crazy. And I'm from the South. I mean, we don't, everything, so everything that we order, we just order regular. And some, but people want gluten-free. I mean, that's a kind of a thing now and stuff, but I'm just mentioning these kind of things because a lot of people around here in Oregon eat healthier. So one of my questions would be was, how did you approach the University of Oregon's student body in order to get them to think outside of the box as far as your fat acceptance and getting people to understand it's okay to be overweight and still be healthy?
Yeah, and it's okay to be fat and to be not healthy. Like, it's straight up okay to be fat regardless of your health status. Which is one of the things I talked about. It was awesome to meet you and your wife there. And Oregon is that, and that university, especially because Steve Prefontaine was there, and so there's like a huge running culture around there, which can tend to lend itself to that sort of idea of performative health and performative eating. And so what I talk about a lot is asking people to examine the stereotypes that they have about fat people. And those can be internalized too, so it can be fat people who believe these things about ourselves. So that's the first thing. But also, I want to be clear that health is not an obligation. Nobody owes anybody else health or healthy habits by any definition. Health is not a barometer of worthiness, right? It's not okay to decide that people are better or worse based on their health. Health is not guaranteed under any circumstances. It, you know, marathoners drop dead of heart attack. There's nothing that guarantees us health. And health is not entirely within our control. And that's a big one because we tend to believe that somehow if we can do all the quote-unquote right things, you know, we'll be immortal. And the truth is a lot of our health is outside of our control. And what is inside of our control, you know, also has to do with things like our socioeconomic status, our access to the, you know, the foods and the movement options that we might like to have. It has to do with whether or not we deal with oppression. Constant oppression is not healthy. Peter Munich out of Columbia did some interesting studies about body size and stigma, and found that the stress of constant stigma is correlated with the exact same health issues that obesity is correlated with, right? And, you know, other studies have been done to look at the stress of constant racism and what health effects that has. And so I really want to help people see that, first of all, this discussion is much more nuanced than what we tend to believe. But more than that, it's nobody else's business, right? So this idea, like, we have this idea that we can't go to a restaurant without it becoming a performance, right? We have to talk about what we're eating, what we're not eating, why we're eating or not eating it, the diet that we're on. If we do eat something, we have to talk about, oh, I'm going to have to spend X amount of time on the treadmill for this, like all of this sort of performance around food, when really we could just order the food, eat the food, and talk about something more interesting. And so I want to, you know, look at, ask, you know, people who come to my talks to examine that too. Like, why do we have this culture of having to justify what we're choosing to eat and why we're choosing to eat it? Why can we not just eat what we're going to eat for our own reasons and then talk about something else?
I, that, I thought that was just beautiful. People explained it because there's a lot of people who feel the total opposite of what you are saying. And then there's other people who love themselves and say, you know, it's okay to be who I am. So other people need to accept me. I've seen this meme one time. It says, oh, well, it's not actually a meme. It's just a little thing that's going around. It says, I'm thick in the waist and cute in the face. And I'd like to get your opinion on that little quote and see how you look at is it a good thing that they say that, or is it a bad thing that they're saying that?
I think it hinges on the word and or the word but. So if somebody says I'm thick in the waist and cute in the face, fine, right? That's describing my body, describing my face, fine. But if somebody says, like, I'm thick in the waist but cute in the face, or, like, I'm big but I'm beautiful, then I start to have a problem with that because it makes it seem like those two things can't happen at the same time, right? So I'm fat and I'm beautiful. I'm fat and, you know, I have a pretty face. But more to the point, even if I didn't have a pretty face, regardless of what size I am, regardless of whether or not someone finds me attractive, I'm still worthy as a human being. I still get to make choices for myself, and I still don't deserve shame, stigma, bullying, or harassment.
Right. I think that's the aspect that we as people need to really reach for, is to accept the person as they are and not judge them for what we perceive them to be. They always say that the first impression is your lasting impression, but if you never speak to them, you don't know how amazing they are.
Yeah.
Go ahead. No, you're fine. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I look at the ability to perceive beauty as a skill set. Right? So if I look at someone and I can't see that they're beautiful, that's because there's an error in my skill set for perceiving beauty. Maybe I've bought into some stereotype about what is attractive and what is not. Maybe it's underlying, you know, ageism or racism or something that's tripping me up. But that's on me. Like, everyone has their own beauty. And if I can't see it, that's on me. And if other people can't see my beauty, that's on them. It may not, you know, that may become my problem in some way, but it's not my fault. And I get to decide, each of us gets to decide how we deal with it. But I think it's important, this idea that, like, we owe other people pretty by their definition, that we owe them attractive by their definition, is super messed up and becomes a power that other people wield against us. You know, like, they'll, whether they're saying that we owe them thin because they find it more attractive, or women owe them shaved legs and shaved armpits because they find that attractive, or trans people owe them a certain presentation because that's how they think trans people should be. There's this misconception that we owe other people a certain way of being or looking, and that's in order to be treated with basic respect, and that's just completely wrong.
Right. That's like us giving power to the other person to tell us what we are and who we are, rather than taking the power of ourselves and standing up for ourselves. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Exactly. And I think it's important, too, that we live in a society that tells us that really the only way we can ever feel good about ourselves is to put somebody else down. It's modeled all over the place. And so people buy into this, and then they try to put us down to feel better about themselves, which did not work in junior high school and is not going to work now. You know, and so we have to also be cognizant of, like, oh, this is what's happening here, right? Like, this person has a self-esteem problem. They're trying to make it my problem, and I don't want their body image issues for Christmas. I want, you know, a Wii or whatever. So they're going to have to deal with that on their own. So even though it's happening to us and it sucks, it can help for us to understand, like, this isn't, you know, this is about this person's issue, and I'm not about to give them the power to tell me whether or not I like me.
So I want to pose this question for you. Do you think that we as a society, just in society in general, that we dress or we act or we do or we go to school for certain things to validate who we are as people? Would you agree with that, or would you phrase it differently?
I think in a lot of cases, yeah, that's what's happening. I mean, we get this idea and it's sold to us, right? Huge corporations and industries make billions of dollars by making us believe that we'll never be enough unless we're something other than what we are, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whether it's beauty products, you know, that we'll never be enough unless we have the right eyebrows or the right makeup, or, you know, as fat people, the idea of like, quote unquote, flattering clothes, where flattering means trying to squish our bodies to make us look as close to the stereotype of beauty as possible. You know, we get this idea, we really only see one stereotype of beauty, and it's typically very thin, very white, and, you know, rooted in this these ideas of beauty. And in this day and age, it's typically Photoshopped, right? So the pictures we're looking at and the pictures that we're supposed to emulate don't even look like the person who was pictured because they've been digitally enhanced. So we get this stereotype of beauty that's literally impossible to attain, and then we're convinced that we have to spend tons of our time and energy and money trying to attain it. Like, it's Sisyphean, like, just keep pushing that rock up the hill, and then you're going to keep, it's going to keep falling down, and you try to push it up again. You're never going to get to the top, but you're going to spend a ton of time and money and energy trying so that you can, like, be okay as a person. When the truth was, you're okay as you are right now, and, you know, we've have the opportunity to say no and to change the culture around this. And it's difficult, and I don't mean to say that it's easy, because it's not, right? But the truth is, if everyone on Monday said, I'm not going to wear makeup to work until it's actually a choice, until it's not expected of me, then the culture would change overnight because it would have to. Right? If people said, I'm not going to wear high heels anymore until it's literally a choice, until nobody is expected to wear high heels, then the culture would change overnight. If we said, I'm never buying another fashion magazine until there are people of lots of different colors and sizes and abilities represented in those pages, and if Monday everyone canceled their subscription to every fashion magazine, the world would change overnight because it would have to. But that's not how it works. This change is really incremental, and it takes people making sacrifices and doing things that are difficult in order to start making changes, but we do have the chance to shift this.
Yeah, that's the same message Martin Luther King did in 63 when he went to Memphis for the sanitation workers who went on strike. And he said that we're not going to buy your Coca-Colas. We're not going to shop in your stores. We're not going to use your transportation. So you have all these thousands of African descent people walking to work, only shopping in black stores, not supporting the economy of Memphis, and it made a difference. And so I totally agree that is something we as people can do to make a paradigm shift into the establishment, saying we will speak and we will make a difference. But it's trying to get everybody on the same page, because everybody's agendas are different. So if we can ever get everybody's agendas on the same page, I think we can make a difference.
Yeah, and I mean, differences are being made now. But yeah, I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, for sure. The next thing I want to talk about is I would like to talk about your book or your manual. Can you talk a little bit about it?
Sure. So the book is called Fat, the Owner's Manual. And I wrote it because it was earlier in my blogging career, and I would get a lot of the same questions from people about, like, basics of size acceptance, basics of health at every size. And so I would, like, refer them, like, oh, try this blog post and then this one. And so I was like, well, why don't I get this information, kind of put it together in a book that people can get, so that they have an opportunity to sort of read through it and have a primer on all the basics. Because I think once you sort of get some of the basics, then it's easier to see what's happening. But our society is so just soaked in anti-fat sentiment that it's like turning on a light switch, you know, to find size acceptance and to find health at every size and to be like, oh, I have totally different options than I thought I did, and I never knew because nobody ever told me, and it never occurred to me. And so I sort of wrote the book to be that sort of book that people can read and be like, okay, this is like all of the stuff that nobody ever told me about, you know, what options I had.
Options as far as what?
Oh, that, like, you don't have to hate your body. You can love your body the way it is now. You can pursue health without pursuing weight loss. They can be completely decoupled. And, in fact, you might be better off. There's good research about how to pursue health without pursuing weight loss. That the research around weight loss shows that it's a pretty terrible way to pursue both fitness and health. So, you know, looking at that, the idea of stereotyping fat people and how much we buy into that, even fat people ourselves internalize that. And so realizing how we do that and seeing how that happens. And then, you know, creating a mantra so that when you see it happening, you say the little mantra in your head, and then it helps you to stay apart from it. Because one of the big challenges is people read blogs like mine and they have these aha moments, but then they leave my blog and the next 50 things they see reinforce the idea that fat is bad, that weight loss is good, that thinner bodies are better. And so having, you know, a way to keep top of mind the fact that all of that is crap is really important too.
Oh, yeah. And I love the way the description of it on your page, it says, Fat, the Owner's Manual, Navigating a Thin, Obsessed World with Your Happy, with Your Health, Happiness, and a Sense of Humor Intact. So the reason why I'm kind of giggling is because I enjoy that, because if you're not happy, like, I've learned that you can only make yourself happy. Things, items, person, place, or thing, or noun, you know, things don't make you happy. You have to have an internal happiness in order to love yourself. And if you don't have happiness, you won't love yourself. And then the caveat to that is having a sense of humor. Like, they say laughter is so healthy for you, right? So you want to surround people that are around you that are positive and uplift you. And if you don't have that surrounding, maybe you need to find some new friends.
Yeah, yeah, and I use humor to deal with a lot of negative stuff in my life, kind of how I've always dealt with stuff that happens to me, and I think it's super important to be able to laugh, to be able to have a group of friends who support you, and I think the internet has been really amazing for that. You know, I went to school in Texas in the 90s, and as a queer woman, it wasn't, you know, necessarily easy for everyone in Texas to find a queer community, but the internet allowed that to start happening for people, and in fat community as well. The Fatosphere is amazing in terms of the number of bloggers, in terms of BBW community, and finding that group of people who can support you and show you your worth and your beauty and help you laugh through the hard stuff.
Right. So I've got to go to this question because did you say queer?
I did.
So queer is an acceptable term?
So queer is a reclaiming term. I like it because it is more inclusive than other terms, like without becoming unwieldy. Once you start saying, getting into like GLBTQ squared, IA squared, T squared, H plus, like I really want, when I talk about my community, I don't want to exclude people. And so I like queer. It also, in the same way that I use fat, queer helps tell my bullies that they can't have my lunch money anymore. It tells them that they don't get to take my word and stick a bunch of negative stereotypes on it and then take that word away from me. But not everybody likes the word, and I understand that too. So it's queer is a reclaiming term, but it's a term that I use.
Right, right. Because I say the N-word, and I don't, you know, I mean, I understand where it comes from. I know the origin of it. And the true origin of it, and a lot of people have a lot of different, you know, they debate me over it. But for me, I mean, it's not. I mean, it's a word that is used in the Black community for endearment and for you would say, why would they use it for endearment? But it's kind of like we take something and we make it our own, and then you have people who are not in our culture say, well, why can you guys say it and I can't? Well, why would you want to say it in the first place? Like,
yeah,
it's nothing to do with you. You know?
Yeah,
it's like,
I think that's like purposeful ignorance. Like, you know why. Don't be ridiculous. You know exactly why. Come on.
Right. Come on. I mean, I'm not homosexual, but I'm not homophobic either. You know what I mean? I believe in God. I believe that in Sodom and Gomorrah, but I'm not. My job as a Christian or a person who believes in God is not to judge a person about what they do in the bedroom, because that's not important. What is important is that they're a good person, that they love people like they should love people, just like they should treat people like other people should treat themselves, that they would love themselves. So, you know, this whole, it drives me crazy. I don't want to get on this subject, but you said it, so I'm kind of, you know, so I'm kind of made a little doorway, you know. So, but, you know, I do not like hearing people argue about the gay and lesbian, the gay and lesbian community. It's like, no, you don't agree with it, but don't use scriptures in order to ostracize someone based up on what you think is, you are right, it's in the Bible, but I was just going to say that, but the first commandment is to love your neighbor as you love yourself. That's the first commandment. So before you can.
Isn't the first commandment, I'm the Lord your God, you shall have no strange gods before me?
That would be in the Ten Commandments.
Okay.
And that was in, and no, that's fine. No, you're right.
But I'm totally with you that love your neighbor is the overarching message of the Bible. I was just, sorry. I guess all that Catholic school growing up stuff with me somehow.
No, very understandable. that scripture, like what you brought up, was in the Old Testament. And when Jesus came and one of the disciples asked, how many times are you supposed to forgive someone? He said, you're supposed to forgive them seven times seven. And he said that you must first love, the first commandment is love your neighbor as you love thyself. And then the second commandment is that as well. So,
gotcha.
Well,
I want to say too, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was finished.
I was going to say, with religion, there are lots of interpretations of the Bible, and there are people who are deeply Christian who don't interpret the Bible as being against homosexuality, queer, and trans people. But regardless, I think religion is a really good way to decide how you want to behave and a really bad way to judge other people's behavior. So, like, if your religion says that it's wrong to be gay, then, like, take a pass on marrying another dude, fine. But telling other people that there's something wrong with their love or trying to go and legislate that's where, to me, it becomes a problem. So I totally agree with you. Like, you know, it's totally fine to believe whatever you believe about queer and trans people or anything else based on your religion. But, you know, loving people, treating them like you want to be treated and giving them the same basic civil rights that you have is still the most important thing to me.
It is the most important thing. Because we're going to be judged on how we treat other people. And that was one of the things that, I mean, that's what I believe. I can't speak for any other person because, you know, that's their belief and how they whatever. But in my belief, and what I believe when I read the Bible, is it's this is why I have shows like this, because you're able to come on and tell your experience from a fat person experience, not only from a fat person experience, but as a queer person, you can also add that to it, because not only are you going into the business world or the world of activity, as I like to call it, but you're pretty much shoving it down their throat, saying, no, I'm fat, queer, and I'm educated, so let me educate you, you know? And it's sometimes you don't get that. You don't get to hear this side of the story. They think that because you are fat or you're queer that you are afraid to speak up for yourself or you are ashamed of your body, you know? And so, like I said, I love to give this platform for you so you can come on and just hit them in the mouth, because it's great. I mean, I love it, you know what I mean? A smart, intelligent woman from a different point of view, not this average white-collar worker, Anglo-Saxon male, saying this is fine. And you know, Lord God, I'm forgive me, but I'm coming in a different direction. I'm sorry. Why is it okay for a gay male that is an intellectual can get farther and more attention than a woman like yourself? That's a question. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, so there's oppression happens intersectionally, right? So there's, you know, different privileges that people have. So a white guy who's gay may be listened to more than, say, a man of color who's also gay, or a woman who's queer or a trans person because of the privilege that being a white male carries in our culture. There's just a sense that, oh, that's a white dude, I should listen to him, and that's sort of ingrained in our culture and creates a privilege that maybe that guy didn't ask for, maybe he can't give it away, but he needs to be aware of it, and there are ways for him to use that to help prop other people up. But I think, you know, we always have to look at how people with multiple marginalized identities are, you know, as Kimberly Crenshaw said, intersectionally oppressed, because they're oppressed as part of each marginalized identity, and then they're also oppressed at the intersections of those marginalized identities.
Right, and to that effect, I'm trying to keep a parameter of where I want to go with this, but one of my all-time favorite shows right now is Orange is the New Black, and I'll tell you why. There is a lot of diversity on that show from, and it's all female cast, majority all female cast, and they don't shy away from homosexuality. Like it's there. And then they're not using just thin models. They're using actual heavier women in those scenes. And I think that if it was on a mainstream network, it wouldn't get the same acceptance as if it would being on Netflix. Would you agree with that, or?
Yeah, I remember the first when I was first started watching it, I was like, oh my god, like, look at the diversity on the show. Like, there are fat black women who have like main characters, and there, you know, are a lot of background characters who are women of color, who are fat women, who, you know, who don't get a lot of airtime. So I was excited about that, and I was also like, but man, like, we need to get this kind of diversity in a show that's not about people in prison. And then
right.
the writing staff has done some really uncomfortable and racist things with the characters. And they, you know, the writing staff is, I think, almost entirely white. And so, like, there's that aspect of it. But I do think that because it's a Netflix show, they've been able to push the boundaries. They've been able to have more diversity. They've been able to talk about queer issues and to some extent trans issues better than a lot of other shows have. And I'm really appreciative of that. That's progress for sure.
Yeah, I really love that show, I forgot her. I forgot the person's name who plays the transgender woman on
Laverne
the show.
Cox.
Yeah, that, I mean, just phenomenal actor, just phenomenal. And
yeah, she's amazing.
Once again, I applaud people like you who are making a difference, because people are listening to the movement, and that not everybody's the same, but we are created equal. We're all protected under the laws. And then the question is should fat women should fat people have their own laws? Like, should they be part of the protected classes? I mean, I don't know. It's out there, you know?
Yeah.
Because what's going on, I mean, because what's going on in our society today is crazy. The protected classes are being attacked, and it seems like it's okay, you know? And I don't understand it, but, you know, I don't know. Don't know. I mean, because I'm really into politics. I'm really into being supporting in people's movements and understanding a person's point of view. And I think if we're able to understand people, we'll be able to listen. I think we should be able to listen more than we speak, because you're not going to ever learn anything if you're always talking.
For sure. And I think, with the idea of fat as a protected class, Jill Andrew, who's an amazing fat activist, she does the Body Positive Awards in Canada and a lot of other things, has started a petition to create weight as a protected class in Canada. And speaks very eloquently about it. But I think the reason that classes are protected is because they have been traditionally oppressed, right? There's a reason. And so one of the things that's done to try to sort of counteract that is to say, oh, these people want special rights. Like same-gender marriage is a really common example. Oh, well, these gay people want special rights. Well, no, they just want the same rights that you have, like that you've always enjoyed, but that you've managed to steal from them. And so I think that when you look at fat as a protected class, it's important to realize that it's not just about, Reddit trolls emailing us and saying fatty's going to fat, right? It's not just about shame and bullying and harassment, although that's bad enough. It's about systemic oppression. Fat people get hired less and paid less than their thin counterparts, regardless of qualification. Trump just appointed the CEO of the Cleveland Clinic, Toby Cosgrove, to a committee to talk about how American businesses should hire. And this is a guy who said that if he could get away with it legally, he wouldn't hire fat people, right? And so now he's part of the government and part of a committee about how to hire people. Fat people have a more difficult time getting medical treatment. Fat people don't get treated equally in transportation. And so there is a systemic oppression of fat people, and I think it's important to address.
Right. And to that point, I've known a lot of people who've tried to work or try to get help. And then the stigma is they did it to themselves. So why should society have to pay for them? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's a horrifying way to look at healthcare. So first of all, the idea that they did it to themselves is way more complex than it sounds, right? We've got this idea of quote-unquote lifestyle diseases, which when you start to scratch the surface, you find that that's not the case at all. But even if it was, right, the idea that only people who didn't cause their health problems deserve health care is horrifying, and it becomes a slippery slope. So if two drivers get into an accident and one of them was drunk driving, like, does one get treated and the other guy doesn't because he was drunk driving, because he made a mistake? Healthcare should be a human right. We should want people to be have access to the things that will make them healthiest and happiest, because that's what makes the best society. And when I say healthy, I mean by their own definition, using their own prioritization and choosing their own path. I don't mean some like government, definition of health that only includes very limited things. I mean holistically. We should look at health as, public health as getting rid of stigma and oppression. That should be a huge part of public health. We should look at public health as having people love and appreciate their bodies, because people don't take care of things that they hate, and that includes their bodies. And so this idea that, oh, well, if it's your own fault, like you should be blamed and shamed about it, not only is it ridiculous, but it's dangerous, because if people know that when they go to the doctor, they're going to get stigmatized, they're probably not going to go to the doctor, and then they're going to have even more health problems that could have been avoided or easily treated. And so I think that the only model for healthcare that works is shame-free, blame-free, and future-oriented care.
Right, and I totally agree. I try not to fight with people about the whole Obamacare or the the Affordable Health Care Act. One thing that I do know that was very well written was the part about pre-existing diseases. Even the people on the far right could understand that is a very important thing to have. Like you said earlier in the broadcast, you said that we don't have control over when we get sick, and that's the truth. So my son said, I really don't like the Affordable Care Act because, you know, they're forcing me to pay into it. And I said, yeah, you're a healthy young man right now, but what happens if you get hurt on the job? Who's going to take care of you? How are you going to sustain yourself? Because thinking like that, you're thinking, okay, well, I can collect unemployment, right? Unemployment is not necessarily an entitlement program, but it is. And the reason why I say that is because you put the money into it so you can get it back when you're unemployed.
Right.
Like,
right.
It's your money. So why does the society make you feel bad about something like that when you've already paid into it and it's yours in the first place?
Yeah, and we're so messed up around that. So the pre-existing condition thing, I was not able to get insurance for 14 years because my body size was considered a pre-existing condition. Insurance companies were allowed to simply refuse to write policies for fat people, and they did. And so the only insurance that was available to me was high risk pool, like someone who would have if they had had cancer multiple times. And it was, you know, unbelievably expensive, you know, per month, a deductible of $20,000, and it only covered catastrophic stuff. And I, you know, just needed basic health care. And so for 14 years, I simply couldn't access the insurance industry at all. And once Obamacare was passed, I got insurance for the first time, and it's been great. You know, I can go to the doctor and have basic care and know that it's not going to cost hundreds of dollars. But I think that we all were conned with the old system. What people don't understand is their cheap premiums were on the backs of other people who were literally dying because they couldn't access basic health care, because they couldn't get insurance because of their pre-existing condition, which perhaps they were born with, right? And so not only that, but we were conned into believing, like, well, it's cool to roll the dice. So, like, since if somebody's young and healthy, then they shouldn't have to buy insurance because we'll just roll the dice that they won't break their leg, which will cost $15,000, which they don't have, and then that money's got to come from somewhere or their leg never gets set correctly. So our ideas around the healthcare system, I think, are really, really messed up.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And can you talk more about how could I put it? Your experience now that you can get health care, your experience with your – I mean, that's kind of personal, so I won't go that route. But in just overall general aspect of people you've talked to that are fat, women specifically, and then men, if you know any, of how their health care is being integrated with their fatness.
Yeah, so one of the frustrating things I think about being fat and trying to access medical care is the tremendous bias that exists among many healthcare practitioners about being fat. And so even once we get insurance and we can access the doctor, like, the fight is not over to get basic compassionate evidence-based care. Because once you get to the doctor, now you have to find a doctor who's going to be able to actually see you as a person and not just as, you know, a fat person who needs to diet. And so there's a thing we call it diagnosis fat prescription diet, which is when you go to the doctor for something completely unrelated. Like, I went to the doctor for strep throat and he was like, oh, well, you need to lose 50 pounds. And I was like, what? I was like, are you telling me I have obesity induced strep throat? And he said, well, no matter what's wrong with you, you're going to feel better if you lose 50 pounds. And I was like, not if I have cancer. And he literally threw his hands up in the air, and he's like, well, I don't know what you want. And I was like, dude, what do you give thin people with strep throat? And he's like, well, antibiotics. I'm like, well, let's have some of those. Like, let's try that on the off chance that it cures strep throat in both thin and fat people. But this is a constant struggle. And so when you go into the doctor and you know that the doctor is going to berate you because of their weight, you know that they're going to give you a prescription for a diet that the research says doesn't work. And one of the things that I find most messed up is because I'll have this conversation with the doctor. So they'll say, I think you should diet. And I'll say, okay, can you show me a study for a diet where the majority of people have succeeded at long-term weight loss, around the amount that you think I should lose? Well, no. Okay, well, yeah, it's my understanding that almost every study of weight loss shows that only a tiny fraction of people succeed at long-term weight loss. And all the studies show that, you know, successful weight loss is between like 5 and 10 pounds. And they will agree with me. Yep, no, that's what the research says. And then they'll say, but it's still worth trying. I'm like, what the hell? No, like, sorry, what the heck? Like, you know, is there another prescription that you would give me and say, yep, this works almost none of the time. The majority of time, you know, because if you think that fat is bad, if you think my body fat is a problem, then recommending dieting is the statistically most irresponsible thing you could do, because the most likely outcome is that I will end up fatter than when I started. So as
right.
a doctor, like, does that, you feel like that, I'll often ask, like, you feel like that's ethical medicine? You feel like that meets your obligation for ethical evidence-based medicine? Well, I mean, it's just, if it does work, it'll be so great. Right, but it's not going to work, but we are already established that. And so in terms of fat people accessing medicine and healthcare, it's just a huge, huge barrier because, you know, as a thin person, and not all thin people are treated the same, right, because there's also racism that's rife within healthcare. There's also transphobia and slut-shaming that happens. So I don't want to make it sound like every single thin person just has, you know, no problem. But, you know, if you go in and you're thin, you have a greater chance of being given some kind of intervention that's been shown to help the health problem that you have. But if you're fat and you go in, often you leave with nothing more than a sheet that tells you to eat less and exercise more, having literally nothing to do with what you went into the doctor for. I had a doctor once refuse to set a broken toe until I agreed to go to a presentation about weight loss surgery. And I mean, like, I don't mean like my pinky toe is broken. I mean, like, my big toe was at a 90-degree angle pointing at my other toes. I was in excruciating pain. And the doctor's like, you know, you really, I can't responsibly set this toe unless you agree to go to this this seminar. And that's just out of control inappropriate. And I was like, I'll start screaming. I'll get another doctor. Like, you need to fix this right now. But this is a constant barrier that fat people face and just trying to get basic health care.
That is ridiculous. I mean,
yes.
You willing to, for a toe that was broken, and he wants you to lose 25, but I mean, to lose weight so they can reset the toe? Like,
oh, he didn't just want me to lose weight. He wanted me to have a surgery that has a vast, gives me a vastly increased chance of death or horrible lifelong side effects. Like, weight loss surgery, to me, like, people are allowed to do whatever they want with their bodies. You want to chop off your arm, do it. It's your body. But in terms of providing evidence-based medicine, weight loss surgery falls way outside of ethical guidelines in terms of the dangers that are involved. So, yeah, he was like, well, if you want to, you know, get your broken toe set, you're going to need to agree to consider amputating your stomach. Like, what? No, that doesn't make any sense at all. Except the toe. That's your job.
Jim, the way I look at it is I think most doctors are just lazy. I really do. I don't. I mean, that's just my opinion. Of course, my opinion, you know, it's nothing factual. But if they were to actually help people the way they're supposed to help people, we would be less inclined to be afraid to go to them to seek their advice. I mean, that's why we go to them, because they're supposed to be subdramatic experts in their fields. And then for them to use something as disrespectful as, hey, we'll let you go to the seminar so you can lose weight to fix a toe, I mean, how professional is that? You know, that's like us going in there and we've already read up of how to set a toe, and we're like, oh, excuse me, sir, you're doing that wrong. It's supposed to be the the, you know, whatever, you know, and it's just that's just ridiculous. I've never heard. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Sorry. No, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, I was just saying, when I hear stories like that, I my wrath, my anger, my PTSD rising, you know, from my toes to my brain, and I just start cringing because I'm African American, and I go through things and I see things that happen that shouldn't happen based on the color of my skin. It's like, but I'm a human being, man. Like, really? You know? And I know this is way off topic, and I apologize, but I just feel like I have to tell this story. Do you remember when Kaepernick kneel down for the national anthem?
Yes.
And everybody was in the uproar talking about he's not patriotic and blah, blah, blah. And how dare he disrespect the veterans and the armed forces who fight for freedom and things like that. Well, I'm a veteran, and I was at a VA center, and I was going to get glasses, and I was sitting there looking in the mirror trying the glasses on, and they had this old veteran that was being wheeled by. He fought in World War II, according to his hat, and he says, "Hey, do you see that monkey in the mirror?" And I'm like, the only thing I could do was laugh, because I'm like, I'm sitting in a seat, trying my glasses, having a mirror, not bothering anybody, nobody else is around, and he says this to me, and what do I say? Like, I think that I'm safe because I'm in a veteran environment. You know, I'm being treated by these people who are supposed to be taking care of the veterans. And a veteran says this to me. How am I supposed to react? You know, so when you are hit with a situation like that, what the doctor told you, I get that cringing, like I said, that anger from my toes to my head. And it just, I don't know, I just. Drives me crazy. So get back on the. It's all about you, not me. I'm sorry.
No,
it
not
just
at all.
Thanks,
first of all, thank you for your service. Thank you.
Thank
and
you.
Second of all, I'm sorry that you have to deal with racist BS. That's unacceptable and not. I mean, the Kaepernick protest is a great example of how racism operates, right? So Black Lives Matter holds live protests, and people are like, no, no, don't protest like that. Like, that's too disruptive. You know, and so this guy just kneels down and people are like, no, no, don't protest like that either. Like, you know, the idea that the protest should make the people, the oppressing class, comfortable is a huge problem. Like, it's really not up to you to tell people how to protest. It's up to you to ask, why are you protesting? What can I do to make this better? Instead of saying, you know, no, the way they're protesting makes me uncomfortable. Who cares? It's not about us. Anyway,
that
sorry, that's an off-topic rant.
No, it's fine. No, that's fine. I mean, because it's kind of, you know, it's kind of on the same pulse. I mean, it's just a different type of discrimination. It's discrimination, nevertheless. You know, and I always refer back to the civil rights movement, and the civil rights movement was considered to be uncomfortable for those people who are being the oppressors. So it's just it's just history repeating itself, you know, and it's sad to say, you know. I mean, we've been fighting for jobs and justice for, you know, close to 40 years, 50 years, and, you know, ain't nothing changed. So I do want to shed some light on something that's kind of funny. Is my little daughter, she's 6 years old, and she tells my wife, she's like, I want to be fat just like you, Mom. Now, if you know my daughter, like, she is really thin, kind of. She's 6 years old. She's, you know, she's a normal little thin little kid, but she eats every second of the day. And she's just like me. But when she said it to my wife, I was like, okay. It was cute because, you know, that's what she sees as love, and she respects that. Like, there's nothing wrong with being big, you know. There's nothing wrong with you know how your kids always embarrass you. Well, you don't have kids, but you probably know, hear stories about this. But so my daughter, we were somewhere in Texas. And there was a big woman, and she was walking out, and my daughter says, "Look, Mommy, another big mommy." So it's like, you know, she wasn't saying it to be malicious or anything. It was just her identifying that Mommy should be nice and thick. Yeah. So I don't know. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, I had it in a grocery store, a little boy said to me, "He has the biggest lady I've ever seen." And his mom was like, she just wanted to sink into the earth, right? And so I was just like, I said, oh, yeah. I said, you know, there are people of lots of different sizes. There are people bigger than me, literal than me, and all those sizes are okay, and everybody's, you know, good the way they are. And the mom, I mean, she looked incredibly relieved but also, like, super embarrassed. And the kid had no judgment, right? He wasn't like, you're the biggest lady I've ever seen, and that's bad. He was just like, hey, you know, of the people I've seen, you are the biggest. And I was like, awesome. Let's talk about that. So, yeah,
right.
But, yeah, I definitely kids can get you into a jam that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's a teachable moment, though.
Mm-hmm.
That reminds me of another story. Is we were at this restaurant, and there was a little boy. He had to be at least about, like, 4 or 5, and he got away from his parents, and he started tapping my wife on the butt. And he says, "My butt, lady." So his mom comes and grabs him and says, "No, you should not do that." And she's a little thin lady with, you know, she had no butt at all, you know. And so it kind of made me funny. It kind of made me laugh, like, like, yeah, he's going to definitely like big girls when he's older.
Yeah, it's a good time to explain to him, like, butts come in different sizes. All butts are good butts. Like, it's all cool.
It's all how you look at it, how you want it. That's crazy. But Lord God. So how can people get involved in your movement, involved in your blogging, involved in your networking, if they want to book you and things like that?
Sure. So kind of the central place to start is danceswithfats.org, and that's my blog. I also have a blog specific to my Ironman journey because I know my regular blog readers don't necessarily want to hear about me running around for no reason. And so that's ironfats.com. Let's see. I'm on Facebook as Reagan Chastain. I'm on Twitter as Dances With That. I apparently also have an Instagram account. I laugh so hard, George, when you talked about Instagram. I was keynoting this conference called the Hottie Hoop Camp. Conference, and it was amazing. It's all hoop dancers, and it was a fabulous event. But they were like really big into taking pictures and Instagramming, and I was like, oh, I have to start an Instagram account. And somebody was like, oh no, you have one. You have like 500 followers. And I was like, do I have pictures up there? And they're like, well, you have one or two. So at some point, I need to like figure out what's happening with that and figure out my login and password. So in theory, I'm on Instagram, but not easy to follow me there. In terms of speaking and booking me, you can find me at sizedforsuccess.com. And then I've got a class that I'm doing right now with Jeanette DePatty and a bunch of really cool guest coaches called the Body Love Obstacle Course. And it's a 10-week course where people really can dig deep into like their own journey with how they feel about their body, getting over the obstacles that can make us struggle with our own body love and body acceptance. And so there's a live course where like online where we're doing live calls, and then there's a self-paced e-course, and people can find that at bodyloveobstaclecourse.com. So that's all my stuff.
So what are they doing? I think I missed it. You said they could call in.
Oh, so it's a class. The class starts in February, so we're just selling it now. It's limited to 10 people, and there's the live classes. And so we have every other week we do a coaching call where we talk about different concepts, and then on the alternate weeks we do a Q&A and discussion calls, and then people have homework in between. So it's like a 10-week course where people can really, like, dig into sort of where they're at with their own body love, how it's affecting other areas of their life, everything from dealing at the doctor's office to relationships and dating to travel and flying and just, you know, a kind of a complete course around body love and body acceptance. And so there's a live class where they can call in, and there's also an e-course so that they get recordings and their own study guide, and they do that on their own so they can sort of self-pace and take their time.
Oh, that's awesome. And this is the very first time you're kicking this off?
No, this is the second. We had 30 people take the class last year, and people had really amazing shifts. And we had, it was, in addition to being like a powerful course, it was a really good time that we had coaching it. And so we decided to do it again this year.
Okay. So do you have a large staff that helps you, or is this you and a couple friends, or how is it operated?
So Jeanette DePatty and I are the main coaches, and then we have guest coaches. So there's Michelle Heff, Isabel Fox Duke, Sonia Renee Taylor, Diane Bondi, Jeff Baker, and I am missing somebody.
I'm sorry if I put you
on the spot. Anyway, no, it's okay. I'm like, oh, why can't it? You know how you go blank at, like, the worst possible moment? So this is what's happening to me. So
yes.
Sixth coach, whoever you are, I'm very sorry, and you're super awesome, and I promise to give you extra love another time. But, yeah, so we've got these guest coaches who come on and do sections about which they have specific expertise.
Awesome. Yeah, wow. Wow.
And
so
then there's like a Facebook
the
group where people can. So the next live course starts in February. And then the e-course they people can start. It's, we're pre-selling now, and it launches December 23rd. And then people can purchase it, and they can do it on their own schedule whenever they like.
Okay. So also, when is the next time are you going to be in Oregon? Do you know? Do you have anything booked?
I've been taking less speaking engagements because of the training for the Ironman. Just traveling and training is really tough because, like, you can't take your bike and weather and all that. So I don't know the next time that I'll be in Oregon to speak, but I hope that it's soon because, it's beautiful there, and I had such a good time.
Yes, it's very beautiful. I'm from Louisiana originally, so it's totally different than Louisiana. So.
Yeah, I lived in Austin for 17 years, and I live in L.A. now. So, and I don't like the heat, so I'm not really sure how that happened. But I love to go to work in the winter. And I'm like, oh, gosh, the air conditioning is not on. This is fantastic.
That is so funny. we can wrap it up. If you would like to say some last words or anything you would like to add, that you think that you need to say before we come to a close, you can close us out.
Cool. Well, I will say that some of the most heartbreaking emails I get are from people who hate their body because they literally don't know that they have another choice. And so I want to just let people know that no matter what's going on with your body, no matter what you look like, no matter what size you are, no matter what your current health and or ability status is, you have the option to love and appreciate the body that you have, and nobody can take that away from you. And I also just want to say thank you, George, for having me on, for this platform in general, for all the amazing work that you do. I really do appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. I'll always hitting you up, telling you, hey, I need you back on the show. And I just thank God that I'm able to get you when you're not busy. So I'm definitely not going to keep you off the air for as long as I did. So I definitely would like to have you back either, after the class is over with so you can come back and talk about the class, or after the Ironman event, if you want to come on and talk about that, that would be great to hear. If you want to talk more about your book, and we can promote your book even more, I'm going to put a link up to it on my page so they can have access to all that stuff. And I'd just like to thank you for giving me this opportunity to give you an interview.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it, and you are always a joy to talk to, so I'll come back anytime.
Oh, thank you very much. All right, well, you have a good night. Thank you.
You too. Thanks so much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, y'all. This is wrapping it up on Sound Up Forum. I thank for everybody who came into the chat room group, who participated. I really appreciate it. I appreciate everybody who tuned in tonight because it is such a special honor to interview Ms. Reagan. I heard her in person at the University of Oregon, and she's very passionate in what she does. And once again, I want to stress this very importantly. When a person has a view, that's their view. That's how they see their life. That's the way they view things, is their experience of their life. So just because you may not agree with her abilities to move through and orchestrate her things in her life is about her life, her liberty, and her pursuit of happiness are not size dependent. That's how she feels about herself. So you may feel like whatever. You may have different views. That's okay. That is who you are. Your life experience creates who you are. Whether a person thinks that's right, wrong, or indifferent, you are who you are. And if you want to be a better person, that's something that you have to do for yourself. My name is George Beverly. This is Sounds Off Forums. The next time I see you or talk to you, you should be sounding off.
Clean down.